The Tom Woods Show, episode 2085.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're like me, when you criticize the Federal Reserve, you get all these lackey-style responses. Why, the Fed has made the economy more stable. You don't want to go back to the 19th century, do you? All kinds of arguments like that. Well, you can blow those and others out of the water with my free ebook, Our Enemy, the Fed. Grab it at ourenemythefed.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. We're talking today to John Wolfenbarger, who has over 25 years of professional investment experience. Just about what's going on with the markets, you know, what effect the Russia-Ukraine situation might be having, what sorts of moves the ordinary person ought to be making. And John is informed by Austrian economics. He's read Mises. He's read all the greats. So in this crowded field of people giving advice about things to do with your money, well, I tend to want to look to people who have some sense of the economy as a whole. And John has that. So I thought it'd be a good time to have a conversation with him. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. As a loyal listener from the very beginning of your show and a founding member of the Tom Woods School of Life, it is truly an honor and a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, you couldn't have introduced yourself better. Although, speaking of which, why don't you actually introduce yourself? I mean, I gave people the bare bones version, but I'd like people to have a sense of who you are and where you're coming from.
Sure. Great. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. So I have been a loyal listener of your show. I first became a libertarian about 30 years ago back in college. And that's also when I started studying finance and investing. I was a finance major in college at the University of Texas. I got an MBA from Duke University. I have a chartered financial analyst designation. I worked for over 25 years in the investment industry, Merrill Lynch, JP Morgan. I worked the last 22 years at Allianz Global Investors, a large investment firm where I was a research analyst researching stocks. I met with popular people like Jeff Bezos and Sheldon Adelson and Howard Schultz and other well-known CEOs in my career. So I have a lot of experience in investing. And, you know, I worked through the big bear markets of the early 2000s and 2008, 2009. And I learned then that, you know, stocks don't just go up. And I learned that I needed to figure out how to make money during bear markets as well. Because as you know, bear markets not only can be very brutal, but they can also last a long time. The Japanese stock market is still down 35% from where it was in 1989. So 32 years of negative returns. So I learned that I needed to figure out how to make money in bear markets. So I spent a lot of time the last 12 or so years researching that. And the result is I left my Wall Street job, and I founded a website last year called bullandbearprofits.com to help regular investors with stock and fund recommendations, as well as education to help them beat the market and profit in both bull and bear markets using objective indicators.
All right. So now I know where I want to take this. A lot of the people I've had as semi-regular guests on my podcast are very, very short and long-term bearish on stocks. So I would include in that category, well, I wouldn't include Peter Schiff because obviously he's a stockbroker, right? But mm-hmm. U.S. stocks, he has not been as bullish on, let's say, than stocks outside the U.S. But then we have somebody like a David Stockman, mm-hmm. or I know of other people who they just feel like under the current circumstances, yes, in the past it may have worked out, but right now there's just too much going on and everything, quote, everything is going to collapse, which I don't know what that means. I think that's a very sloppy way to talk. What do you mean? People are just going to stop buying and selling? No company will be profitable anymore? I don't understand that. So that's a crazy extreme. But then I have real bulls. I have people like Gene Epstein, who's not, I mean, he's a constant bull, but he thinks that there's some value in the stock market, as well as Mark Skousen. So I want you to address this issue here about whether or not it's the case we need to avoid stocks entirely. And I'm talking a bit too much here, but I want to just share the way I think about it. My sense is if I have a stock, it's just an ownership share in a company. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing weird or sinister or odd about it any more than I would have my own company and just own the whole thing. And so if I thought, quote, everything is going to collapse. Why would I bother starting my own company? Because apparently that's also going to run to zero. Right. So if I have enough confidence to start my own company, then it's also possible that somebody else's company could be profitable. That's all we're saying. It's not that you have to trust the Fed or anything like that. It's just simply that if you have a sense that your own company might be profitable, there's a chance that some other company might be profitable. And even in dark times, there are companies that are profitable. And the question is figuring out which ones those are. So now I'll turn it over to you for a better answer than that.
Okay, that is true. And I think one of the biggest mistakes, it's certainly a mistake I made throughout much of my investing career, and I see, you know, very famous people, including the ones you mentioned, they're either permabulls or they're permabears. They're always bullish, they're always bearish. You know, Warren Buffett, the U.S., you know, U.S. economy is going to do fine over time. The U.S. stock market will be fine, and you should just own a stock index fund, and you'll be fine. And then you have, obviously, permabears you mentioned, or people who only own gold. You know, gold is the only way to go. Gold fell about 70% from 1980 to 2000. So you had 20 years of horrendous returns on gold. You know, you should only own Bitcoin. You know, I sympathize with that, but, you know, Bitcoin's fallen about 40% in the past few months. So every financial asset goes through these bull and bear market cycles. And you're 100% right. A business that business you may start, or even, you know, lots of publicly traded companies, you know, Starbucks, for example, they're probably going to make lots of money no matter what, you know, what's really going on in the stock market. They can make profits, but the stock price is driven by those profits, but it's really driven in many ways more by investor psychology and just the fear and the greed that investors have. It also relates to the economy, but that psychology can really create these huge swings in stock prices. And, you know, the entire stock market, either up or down, that go way beyond what the earnings are doing. So you can make money in a business, certainly starting a business, you can have the cash flow of that business. And, you know, if it's a relatively acyclical business, you can make those cash flows through, you know, really, you know, more or less whatever the economy is doing. But if you're investing in stocks, and there are some stocks that are very defensive and will be relatively immune to a bear market. And those are stocks I look for in a bear market. But in general, you know, the overall stock market, regardless of what earnings are doing, can go through these major swings in bull and bear markets. And the 1973-75 bear market, which was the S&P fell about 45%. That was the worst bear market since the Great Depression up to that time. And earnings continued to grow through that bear market. So you just had a change in investor psychology where people just sold stocks and you had a big drop in stocks. So the stock market is kind of its own creature in a way, driven by the whims of investor psychology. That's the trick of the stock market. I don't know if that helps.
Well, if you look at charts that depict returns from various things, and so you could look at gold, you could look at the stock market, you could look at bonds, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of things, and the stock market in the long run just outperforms all of them by a mile. Now, that's right. A fact. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be short-term periods of time where you might feel some pain. If you have dividend-paying stocks, that can ease a little bit of the pain. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that there's one asset class. Well, yeah, no, I might. I would stay away from bonds, personally. But other than that, mm-hmm. I have some money in stocks, and I don't think mm-hmm. I'm being reckless by doing that. But the real issue becomes which ones, and how does the average person evaluate that? And frankly, if I'm going to have my money in something, I want to know about it. I want to understand why I'm doing it. I don't want to do it just because my friends are doing it or other people encourage me that it's the right thing to do. I really want to understand it. And it seems like it would take an inordinate amount of time to do that. And at the same time, I don't want to trust some financial planner that right. person has done the research. I want it to be my own research. And I don't necessarily know that I trust my own research or that I would even know where to begin doing the research. These are the kinds of things that somebody sympathetic to where you're coming from might, mm-hmm. ways they might object. Now, what do you say to them?
Right. Okay. Well, there's a lot of things to talk about there. So first of all, on my website, bullandbearprofits.com, every month I recommend 4 to 10 new stock and fund ideas. So I'm always providing new ideas and I provide a summary of the fundamentals and as well as the technicals on the chart. You know, so I was a stock analyst for 22 years. So I've become pretty good at researching stocks. I had the best performance at my firm when I left the company. So I, I think I know a thing or two about picking stocks. So I can do that. If you don't have that experience, I have to say it's quite hard to learn. And I think there are three ways to make money in financial markets, if I could break it down. Okay, the most traditional way and the hardest way is just what you're talking about. Trying to find individual stocks, picking them. Again, I did this for 22 years. It's not easy. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of research, a lot of knowledge. So trying to find, you know, those stocks that are going to beat the market and trying to find some that will actually go up in a bear market, that's really hard to do. So that's kind of the hard way to invest. I do that as a service on my website, but the easier ways are, in some ways, are if you can identify when you are in a, let's say a stock, and you can do this for any asset, you know, Bitcoin or commodities or, you know, bonds or anything, but let's just say stocks. And I do have very simple ways you can identify if the stock market is in a bull market or if it's in a bear market. If it's in a bull market, all you have to do is buy an S&P index fund or ETF. Or if you want to beat the market, that will match the market. If you want to beat the market, you can buy levered ETFs that go up double whatever the S&P goes up. So in a bull market, the S&P usually goes up at least 10% a year. So you could buy a double long that goes up at least 20% a year. And you don't have to do any more research. You know, you literally just say, okay, we're in a bull market, and which I tell you on my website, we're in a bull market, I'm going to buy this double long ETF, and you're done. And then you just have to monitor and see when, you know, when and if we go into a bear market. And then if you're in a bear market, you can find some stocks that will go up in a bear market. For example, at the bottom of the 2009, you know, bottom in the stock market, I think 5% of stocks were still in a kind of a bull market uptrend. So it's really hard to find those in a brutal bear market. But in a bear market, you can buy ETFs that go up in price by the amount the stock market goes down in price. So if the S&P falls, for example, in 2008, 2009, the S&P fell about 60%. There's an ETF, the ticker is SH, it rose about 90% in that bear market. That was a short ETF. There's a double short ETF that rose about 180% in that bear market. It's called SDS. So if you can just determine if you're in a bull market uptrend or bear market downtrend, which I can tell you how I do that, then you can just buy these ETFs that go up in a bull market or they go up in a bear market. So that's the easy way. Otherwise, you're right. It's a lot of work, and I spent my lifetime trying to learn how to pick stocks. And you know, even I don't get it always right. No one does. So it's a lot of work for someone who's not doing that full time.
Is there a way that the insights of Austrian economics regarding business cycles and central banking can help investors? Because after all, Mises himself famously said something to his wife, something along the lines of, you know, I need to caution you that I talk a lot about money, but I won't ever have very much. But yet it seems like you should if you understand how all this works. So what is the connection?
Right. There's definitely a connection. Again, I like to focus on bull and bear markets. And as you know, typically the biggest bear markets do coincide with a recession. And a recession, as you know, I do recommend Meltdown, your famous book on my website. And I love that book.
Thank you.
As you know, Austrian Business Cycle explains how a slowing money supply tends to eventually lead to a recession. And then after that, an accelerating money supply leads to a recovery. And I know you've had Murray Sabrin on the show, and he talks about an inverted yield curve is a great signal that a recession is coming. Usually recession starts about a year after the yield curve inverts, which means long-term rates are below short-term rates, which is unusual. And that happens, you know, it's related to money supply slowing. So if you monitor money supply, which I do, I use the Austrian money supply definition that Murray Rothbard and Joe Salerno developed. If you look at money supply growth and you can look at the yield curve and other leading economic indicators like that, it can help you assess if you're heading into a recession or if you're in a recession heading into a recovery. So that is very useful. It helps build conviction on, you know, if you're long the market or if you're short the market, it helps you build conviction on that. But what I learned, and again, someone who read Human Action and Man, Economy, and State, you know, 30 years ago back in college, I learned that the stock market doesn't always perfectly coincide with an economic recession. So for example, in the early 2000s bear market, the bear market started about 12 months before that recession started. And the bear market ended almost 12 months after that recession ended. So timing is critical in investing. You know, if you're an economist, oh, we're going to have a recession in a year or two or three, you know, that's fine. But when you're investing money, timing is critical. And so that's why, you know, it's helpful to have an idea of what's going on in the economy. But the most important thing is to really analyze the actual investment itself, the stock market itself. And you can do that with technical analysis, which is, you know, chart analysis, which I can explain if you're interested.
Well, I guess we'll have to. And incidentally, I don't know how I'm not the expert, but I'm skeptical of that there's some technical analysis that is simple that anybody can use, and then they'll discover that this or that stock is the way to go. Because if that existed, everybody would be using it. Everybody would have stumbled upon it by now. So prove me wrong.
Okay, I will do that. Yeah, so I like to keep technical analysis very simple. And I was always taught in college and business school and at work that technical analysis didn't work. It's essentially looking at a price chart. Again, let's say the S&P 500. Look at a price chart, and there are some very simple indicators, primarily moving averages. And a moving average, it just smooths out the day-to-day noise of, you know, prices move up and down every day. So like a 250-day moving average is essentially the average price of the last year of trading days. And a very simple thing to do is look at the price of, let's say, the S&P 500. If it's above, if the price is above the 250-day average, so the average price of the past year, that tells you you're in an uptrend. You're essentially in a bull market uptrend. If the price falls below that 250-day moving average, again, this is extremely simple, then that tells you we're starting a downtrend. You know, we're now below the average price of the last year. And it doesn't tell you how long that downtrend is going to last or how deep it's going to be or that kind of thing, but it tells you that you're in a downtrend. And I show on my website, if you look at like the early 2000s bear market, 2008, 2009 bear market, I show you when the price falls below the 250-day and then some other moving averages like the 20-day moving average and the 60-day moving average also fall below the 250-day, then you essentially, what I would say, you are objectively in a bear market downtrend, and then you can buy a short ETF and make money as long as the price stays below that 250-day moving average. When the price rises back above the 250-day moving average, then you're back in a bull market and you want to get out of your short on the market, and then you want to get back into a long. So it's really quite simple and it happens repeatedly. And as far as why, you know, it doesn't always work, it doesn't, you know, or why people haven't figured it out, there are technicians who do look at this, but again, this is based on human psychology, ultimately. And human psychology hasn't changed in a long time. It's all based on herding behavior. There's significant uncertainty in financial markets. So investors herd, and you know, prices, they're either going to be essentially buying and driving the price up or selling and driving the price down. And all that a chart does is just show you what's happening. There's no magic to it. It's just showing you that people are selling, and these selling trends persist. There's been a lot of academic studies that show that trends do persist in financial markets. They obviously don't last forever, which is why you have a bull market and you have a bear market. The market doesn't just go up and down, you know, randomly. I mean, it does somewhat every day, but it's generally in an uptrend or a downtrend for long periods of time, years usually. So trends persist in financial markets. It's due to herding behavior, and you can chart this, you know, pretty simply with charts. It's just, you can look throughout history and it continues to repeat itself, and it's repeating itself right now.
Well, what should somebody in this environment do? I mean, we've got economies still struggling to get back to normal after all the COVID restrictions, and we still hear about supply chain problems and labor market problems, and we've got Russia and Ukraine. I don't know. Is that a time when I want to go into the stock market and buy a bunch of stocks? I mean, obviously, the key question is a bunch of stocks. There's almost always something to buy, but geez, I don't know. I mean, on the other hand, it seems like, now I haven't looked in the past few days, but at least one energy stock I know has done pretty well under the current circumstances. Mm-hmm. But who knows?
Absolutely.
So what would you say to a novice right now about what to do?
Right. Well, again, kind of getting back to our earlier discussion, one of the classic mistakes I think that every investor makes, including myself, is the reason, sort of as an economist would, you know, okay, there's a war now in Russia, we have COVID, you know, all these things. And you try to say, okay, the stock market should do this. but it doesn't always do that. That's the problem. It doesn't always follow what you would logically think. For example, in 2019, we had an inverted yield curve, as you probably recall, and that suggested we were going to have a recession in 2020. Then we had COVID, the lockdowns. We had a global depression, really, for at least some period of time. And we had the inverted yield curve. And what did stocks do? They crashed for 1 month, fell 35%, and then they skyrocketed to all-time new highs. Now, if you tried to reason through that and say, okay, we have the pandemic and the lockdowns and inverted yield curve, you would have missed much of that. So that's why it's really hard to just reason through. You know, we all think we're very smart and we can just, oh, the stock market should do this and this should happen. You really have to look at the technical indicators, because that tells you, that incorporates all the fundamental information of investors as well as the psychology of investors. So there's fundamentals and psychology together, and you really can't know what that is until you really look at the charts, essentially. So right now, for example, commodities are in a very strong bull market. They've been outperforming the stock market since the bottom in 2020, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But generally, commodities, I think, are really the place to be probably for the next 5 to 10 years. If you want to invest kind of on a long-term basis and not worry about looking at charts too much, although I would never say that. I think you do need to look at the charts. But I think the best asset class probably over the next 5 or 10 years will be commodities. And it's not necessarily because the Fed has increased the money supply 40%, which they have in the last couple of years, or because of Ukraine or because of COVID. A lot of it is because commodities were at the bottom in 2020, were incredibly cheap relative to GDP, relative to stocks. So the cheapest asset class really back then and still now is commodities. So I think, you know, commodities move in 10 or 20 year cycles. And the last cycle was, you know, around 2000 to 2010 or so was a commodity bull market. And then we had a commodity bear market the last 10 years or so. And it looks like we're starting a new commodity bull market, which should last, you know, probably, you know, potentially at least 10 years. So I think commodities are a great place to be in general. But in the next 10 years, we could have a major stock bear market. And that usually leads to potentially deflation as well as a major commodities, you know, bear market. So you really have to monitor the cyclicality. So I think commodities are interesting long-term, and commodity stocks, as you mentioned, like oil stocks, I've been recommending those recently, agriculture stocks, that kind of thing. Yeah, so there are places to be, and I do think commodities are the most attractive. But again, any market, commodities, gold, stocks, they can go into these major bear markets, and it's not fun to lose 50% or so in a few months, I can tell you. And again, bear markets, they don't always end in a year or two. The Japanese stock market 32 years later is still 35% lower than it was in 1989. So these bear markets can last a long time.
I want to think about the person who's a complete beginner to all this, though. If you say to the average person, you should invest in commodities, they would have no idea what's the next step. What are you asking of me? You know, sometimes we're in this world where we just assume everybody just knows what we're talking about. I think most people, if you say commodities, don't even know what you're talking about, much less how mm-hmm. they're supposed to invest in them.
Oh, that's a great point. So on my website, again, I'm not just here to promote my website, but you know, I do have a free ETF and stock basics course. So it's a course, it's completely free. It's for beginning investors, and it walks you through all the steps, how to open a brokerage account, you know, what are good brokerage firms you should use, et cetera. And then once you open a brokerage account, then again, on my website, I'm recommending stocks and ETFs. And so ETFs are essentially funds that trade on the stock market. You can buy and sell them like a stock, but they're funds that could invest in the S&P 500, you know, stock index, or it could invest in commodities like oil or gold or agriculture or silver, you know, things like that. There's some ETFs that invest in Bitcoin. So you can invest in Bitcoin that way. Some invest in bonds, some invest in real estate. So there are ETFs that essentially you can invest in virtually anything in the world, different countries, you know, Russia, probably not a good time right now, but you can invest, you know, all over the world and all sorts of different investment vehicles. So let's say you wanted to buy commodities, you could open a brokerage account, and then there are commodity ETFs, a really good one for a broad commodities ETF. The ticker is PDBC. And one thing about commodities is a lot of the ETFs, you have to file a K-1 tax form, which is a major hassle. This one does not require a K-1 tax form. It's structured, so you don't have to do that. So PDBC, it's called the Invesco Commodity Strategy No K-1 ETF. That's just an example. There are gold ETFs. Again, there are Bitcoin ETFs. So that's why I built my website. And I recommend stocks. I tell people, you know, buy this stock, buy this ETF at this price. I give them prices to sell at if it either goes up or down. So their exit is automated. I explain what it is. I show the chart, show the trends. So I think, again, my website, I think, is a good place for beginners to start. And obviously, I have over 50 books of recommended investment reading, including your book and many others, where I recommend, you know, people want to learn more. But and I have webinars, I have special reports. I have a lot of free educational content on there. So that's why I put it together, to help people. Again, I want to help people make lots of money in both bull markets and bear markets, which very few people know is even possible, much less know how to do. And I show it in a pretty simple way.
Hey, folks, I want to take just a minute to tell you a story, the story of a friend of mine named Mike, who lost his job during COVID and had to figure out what he was going to do with his life after that. And well, what do you know? He'd been listening to me for a while. And he'd been listening to me talk about e-commerce and stuff like that. So he started his own business and his own little store. But the product he has is so great. I have one of them myself. They're beautiful wooden watches. And when he said that he made watches out of wood, I thought, well, surely you don't mean the strap is made out of wood, but the strap is made out of wood. And it's absolutely gorgeous. It's a beautiful kind of unusual gift item to get anybody. Anybody would be stunned by one of these. They're affordable, and yet they look like they cost you a fortune. And by the way, when I say they're a great gift, they can be a great gift for yourself. And seeing that Mike is a friend of Ole Woods, you can be sure that this is a libertarian-owned small business. It's Axe Head Watchmakers. So AxeHeadWatch.com. AxeHeadWatch.com. And guess what? If you use promo code Woods, you can take 25% off a watch. In terms of the interior of the watch, they use the same Japanese Miyota movements that are used in Citizen and Movement watches. So let me recap. Great guy, lost his job through no fault of his own, picked himself back up, created an amazing, beautiful product that will make any gift recipient of yours happy, including yourself, and you get 25% off when you use code Woods. So what are you waiting for? Head to axeheadwatch.com. That's axeheadwatch.com. Some people might hesitate to invest in not just stock market, but also something like Bitcoin because of the volatility involved. Yes, there's a potentially big upside, but there's also a potentially big downside, and it can happen very fast. Is there a way to protect themselves against things going south really fast?
Well, the primary way is, first of all, that's why, you know, when you buy is critical. So that's why you have to look at the technicals. You want to see that you're in an uptrend. And I look at uptrends on multiple time levels. There are long-term uptrends, medium-term, short-term, and very short-term uptrends. So you kind of, when you buy, you're almost assured of getting at least an initial rise. So the timing is critical when you buy, using technicals. But even that, you know, things can go wrong. I mean, anything can happen. So the way to limit your risk, really, the primary way, which I recommend, is trailing stop orders. So if you buy a stock on, let's say you're at, you know, Schwab or Fidelity, you know, generally people have an online brokerage account, you place an order for a stock, let's say it's trading at $100, you buy that stock, and then you can immediately place an order for a trailing stop that says, I want to sell this stock if it falls 10% from its highest level it reaches after I buy it. So if I buy it at 100 and it falls 10% to 90, then I'm taken out of it. So you've lost 10%. But if it goes from 100 to 110, then the trailing stop rises as the price rises. So the trailing stop goes up, you know, close to 100. And then if it falls back to 100, then you get out roughly break even. So trailing stops are really the best way, I think, for most people to limit their risk once they bought something. I mean, think stocks and Bitcoin, these are volatile instruments, and you know, there's no way to eliminate that. That's ultimately why you're buying them, because you think they're going to go up a lot. And if they weren't volatile, they would go up a lot generally. So there's always going to be a volatility, but you can limit your risk by placing these trailing stops. And that's what I recommend with all my recommendations, because know, people who owned Enron, you know, some things can go to zero. You know, some stocks can go to zero. It's rare for the S&P 500 to go to zero, but it can go down 60%. It went down, you know, 90% in the early 1930s. So things can go down a lot. And if you can get out with a 10% loss or 20% loss, worst case, that's not bad. And that knowing your loss is limited to that gives you confidence to invest and make profits on the long side.
One more thing I want to touch on, somewhat related, but not really. And I think, though, some people would be interested in it. You, not too long ago, moved to Portugal. And I have a bunch of people who have been thinking about what their options are. If not to move immediately, then at least to have a plan B. I personally am convinced that the U.S. is the best place to live. And I know there are people who think I'm crazy. I say, show me someplace that's better. Mm-hmm. And believe me, there is nobody on earth who understands the shortcomings of the U.S. better than I do. Okay. That's almost what I do for a living, is talk about them. Okay. So I totally get it.
Understood.
So I want you to talk about Portugal and what your experience has been like, because when I recently had Doug Casey make a private presentation to the School of Life program, he singled out Portugal among European countries. He's not bullish on Europe, but he singled out Portugal as being probably the best place if you had to pick one. So talk about that, please.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Yeah, I agree with all of that. I love the United States, lived there most of my life until about 3 years ago, my wife and I moved to Lisbon, Portugal. We moved from San Francisco, which I think you know the shortcomings of that place. So for us, I do think it's the best place in Europe. The big problem is the EU. You know all the problems with the EU and the power they can exert over every EU country. So that's the big concern that I have. But Portugal itself, we love it. To us, it's very similar to California. I grew up in Texas, but California, you know, the weather is pretty darn good. Not as good as Florida in the winter, so I give you that. But so it's a similar climate to California, beautiful beaches, beautiful wineries. It's very similar to California, but it's much cheaper. It's at least half the cost of California, much safer, very little crime. I think Portugal's the third safest country in the world, according to some rankings. And it's much more normal here. People don't fight about everything like they do in the U.S. That's one thing I do not miss about the U.S. People don't argue about politics. It's very calm and relaxed. It's very civilized, very kind of traditional. It seems like what I would imagine California was like maybe in the 50s or something, you know, where it's people are just more, a lot more normal, and it is much cheaper. I think one reason why Doug Casey and others, there's tons of people retiring here from the U.S. There's a couple of reasons. One is taxes. There's the first 10 years you move here as an expat, taxes are generally non-existent on overseas income. So if you're getting a Social Security or you have a business based in the U.S. like you might, then you essentially don't pay taxes here in Portugal, which is nice. And after 5 years of living here, you can get a Portuguese passport, which allows you full access to living anywhere in the EU, Italy, or what have you. So it's pretty easy. It's easy to move here. People are very friendly and welcoming. It's the seventh best country in the world for English speaking after the United States and UK. But it's for non-English speaking countries, it's one of the best. Most people here, particularly in Lisbon, speak great English. I walk into a store and I say, bon dia. And they're like, English? I'm like, yeah, English. So it's almost hard to, it's hard to learn Portuguese here because people speak English so well. So it's really, we love it. It's really a wonderful place. It's incredibly, Lisbon's incredibly international. So we meet people from all over the world. It's very interesting. I agree with you. The United States is overall, objectively speaking, the best country in the world. But culturally, we're just really enjoying the variety and the difference and meeting so many different people and exploring so many different things. And it's so fun to travel around Europe, et cetera. So it's just kind of a different life. And it's one we're enjoying very much. And the safety is really nice. You know, when I go back to the US now, at least, you know, places like San Francisco, especially San Francisco, you know, I forgot what it's like to feel physically in danger of my life. And I never feel that here. So anyway, we love it a lot. And I do think if anyone's considering moving to Europe, I think Portugal should be near the top of the list.
All right. Excellent. Now let's get to your website. You want to direct people there to find out more about what their first step should be if they're curious. So why don't you tell us the website, but also you mentioned that you have a whole bunch of books that you recommend. Do you have a book for the beginner just to at least learn the lingo and the basic concepts, nothing too advanced?
Yes, absolutely. So first, on my website, it's called bullandbearprofits.com. You can access everything for free. Some of the stuff I asked, you know, give me your email and you can set up a password and that kind of thing. But I have video webinars, I have long special reports, I have this free stock basics course. I have a glossary, so an investor glossary, like you're talking about, where it does go through the lingo. And I do, again, I email out 4 to 10 new stock and ETF recommendations every month. So I have all of that. As far as a book where you can learn the lingo, my favorite book, so there's fundamental analysis, which is, you know, looking at the earnings and the, you know, quality of the company, kind of the Warren Buffett investing. And then there's technical analysis, which again, I think is useful for determining if you're in a bull or bear market. So on the fundamental side, there's a book called The Warren Buffett Way that's good for kind of explaining Warren Buffett's fundamental analysis, you know, based on earnings growth, return on equity, that kind of thing. For technical analysis, this book is what really kind of changed my life and enabled me to see that you can pretty easily identify when a bull market and bear market are starting and then invest accordingly. Anyway, it's called Stan Weinstein's Secrets for Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets. Stan Weinstein's Secrets for Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets. It was written in the 80s. It's very simple, very easy to read. It's a fun read. And it shows you charts and how simple they are to understand and use. So I would definitely look at that one.
Okay. So I'll link to this stuff at tomwoods.com/2085. In particular, your website, bullandbearprofits.com, and people can look around and decide for themselves. Now, I'm telling you, I'll already predict for you what the comment section is going to be. It's going to be, you know, this advice would have worked 30 years ago, but we're in a whole new world now because of this, that, and the other. And that's fine. If you don't want, you don't have to, I'm not saying you have to go invest in the stock market. You know, you don't have to. Just don't. But it does have a really long track record. And there is a really long track record of people saying the big one is coming and this is it and everything's going to get wiped out and hop into a cash position immediately. And we have a long track record of that. And that doesn't seem to pan out as well. So don't make it sound as if we're just stupid idiots and we're not sophisticated enough to understand the uniqueness of our present moment. That's not what's happening.
I totally agree. I mean, yeah, the long-term history of the stock market is fantastic, but obviously things are different now than they were 100 years ago, you know, so, and there are lots of stock markets, international stock markets that have not come anywhere close to what the U.S. stock market does.
Right. Let me point out, when I made that comment earlier about returns from various assets, I meant specifically the U.S. stock market.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so, you know, the U.S. over the next 100 years, hopefully it's at least as good as it was over the past 100 years. But the one thing I just wanted to mention before we go, the long-term return, by long-term, I'm saying the next 10 to 12 years, next 10 to 12 years, returns of the stock market can be predicted to some extent. On my website, I go through it, but there's an economist and fund manager named John Hussman who does the best work on this. And he writes free articles on his website, Hussman Funds. And he shows there's a Warren Buffett has said his favorite valuation indicator of the stock market is the total market capitalization of the entire stock market divided by US GDP. So it's stock market capitalization divided by GDP. And this John Hussman, he has a slightly modified version, he's done regression analysis of this metric versus the next 12 years returns. And there's an incredibly close correlation between this valuation metric of the stock market and the next 12-year returns. And right now, this valuation metric is 40% higher than it was at the 2000 tech bubble peak. It's far higher than it was in 1929. It's the highest valuation ever in U.S. history of the stock market. It's incredibly expensive. And based on the history of this index, it's telling us that the U.S. stock market will be about 50% lower in 12 years. So again, people find that incredibly hard to believe, but the Japanese stock market was 80% lower 20 years after 1989. So in 2009, it was 80% lower than it was in 1989. Stocks can go down a lot and they can stay down a lot. And this valuation of the stock market is the highest level it's ever been in history. And again, there's lots of empirical data to support this. It's not just an opinion. It's not just a gut feel. It's not because we don't like the Fed. the stock market is the most expensive it's ever been. That's just telling us what the returns will be in 12 years. It doesn't tell us we're starting a bear market today or yesterday or tomorrow or next year. It doesn't tell us exactly when, but it tells us that if you just buy and hold stocks from now until 12 years from now, you're probably going to lose a fair bit of money. And most people, I don't think, are prepared for that. And most people don't want to do that. So I think that's why you need to be able to figure out when a bear market is starting, when it's ending, and kind of play these bull and bear market cycles.
All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap it up for today. TomWoods.com/2085 has the links, the main one of which is bullandbearprofits.com. Well, John, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tom. Take care.
All right, folks, before we wrap up, I want to tell you about an event that some of you will find interesting. Well, you'd all find interesting. It's just a matter of can you get there. But April 2nd, 2022, there is an event the Mises Institute is putting on in Birmingham, Alabama, called the COVID Endgame. And it's going to feature Per Bieland, who's an economist, a professor I've had on the show, Mark Thornton of the Mises Institute, I've had Mark on the show, and Todd Zwicky, a law professor at George Mason University, I've also had him on the show. And they're going to be talking about that. Now, Todd was involved in a lawsuit against the law school, or I don't know, it might have actually been all of GMU, on the grounds that he had natural immunity, and it was ridiculous to demand vaccination of him, and he won that suit. So he's a very interesting guy. I've been meaning actually to get him back on. But all the same, they're putting on a nice little event, just $45. It includes a catered lunch, and you learn some interesting stuff and get to meet some like-minded folks. So if you're interested in that, just head over to Mises.org/events for more information. That's Mises.org/events. So that's a Mises Institute event that they're holding in Birmingham, Alabama, April 2nd. So check that out. These Mises events are always great fun. All right, that's it, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.